you darken my door. It is in this bad. I need to settle the score. Twisting in the wind. Let me do my duty. We can make a new start. Let love live forever in our hearts.
Meeting. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing.
I have met Kathy, and I've seen her as a tradition and at these meetings, and I know that they have a really good program as a tradition, and so I invited her to come and share her experience, strength, and hope. So I give you Kathy G.
I am Kathy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hello. My sobriety date is February 19th, 2019, and as Lisa said, I have a home group. It's the fifth tradition group. It's in the Shambly-Tucker area, about 15 minutes from here, I think. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor the women. My instructions are, in a general way, to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so I was in prayer a lot on the way here about this in the last few days before. So I was given some really valuable instruction, and it was about when you tell your story, of course, we want to spread this wonderful message of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but we all have different backgrounds. We all have different journeys to get here. Even though we're so similar in so many ways, we're also really, really different. And the particulars of my story, I think, are very different, and that's okay. And I may or may not, you know, touch someone here. That's not necessarily the goal. The goal is just to tell you my story. And in so doing, hopefully, I get to carry a message. Maybe somebody will hear something that's valuable and worthwhile. I hope maybe you identify with some of the feelings and some of the experiences that I share. So I'll start at the beginning. I was born in Los Angeles, California, to a 21-year-old woman and a 19-year-old guy who got married 2 weeks after they met when my dad was 16 years old, running away from home, doing this Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing where he took his dad's car and he ran away from home and he just went out on a rampage, basically. And the way my mother tells it is that he just would do things like sell things to people and take their money and then sell that thing and change license plates and blah, 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 and ended up from California to Iowa, where he met my mom. And my mom was a pretty broken, fractured person who really didn't have the capacity to feel or care or love anyone, according to her. And she meets this guy who's like super adventurous and different and quirky and hyper, and she's got like, well, I got nothing better to do. I'm in Iowa, so yeah, let's go. And they take off and they start doing the same thing my dad was doing. And after a few weeks, they got caught in Texas, and he got arrested and blurted out everything. And they called his parents to come get him with his wife. And a few years later, I was born. And a brother came. That relationship was very, very violent. My dad was really young, of course. And anyway, they divorced when I was 4. And I didn't see my dad for the most of my childhood years. We have since reconnected, but not so much during my childhood. And then my mom remarried when I was 9. To a guy that I absolutely detested, and I was pretty sure he detested me. My mother was not alcoholic yet, but it was soon after they got married that she started drinking very, very heavily, and that's when everything turned, I thought, to chaos and a lot of instability. And for those of you who have grown up in alcoholism or violence or just with a lot of disruption, without any financial security, moving a lot, different schools, you know, the parents totally obsessed with themselves and each other. There's just not a lot of energy left over for taking care of kids in any kind of meaningful way. And so I just kind of grew up feeling like I wasn't, you know, cared about or loved, or anything I had to say or anything I thought I didn't think was worthy or valid. And so I learned how to survive in this world by developing all these defense mechanisms like we all do, right? Which later became, as I know it now, my character defects. And those things aren't bad. They're the best I could do with what I had at the time, just like my parents had. And so the things that I learned to do as a result to survive that childhood and my adulthood, and even up until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous where I'm practicing a different way of life. I like to think about my story as kind of backwards, and I'd like to explain what that means. What that means to me, and this is the first time I've really shared it like this in a meeting, but what that means to me and why this is so significant to me, maybe somebody here in this room, maybe not, is because it's so important for me that I understand my alcoholism.
It's so important that I know that I identify. It's so important that I know that I belong here and that I am an alcoholic and that I choose this way of life because of what happened to me as a result of alcohol. But what happened to me is kind of unusual and different and kind of backwards. And that's because, like I said, the things I learned in early childhood to help me survive, I practiced those instead of drinking for a really long time. Decades and decades. You know, I think I mentioned my mom she was a binge drinker, but that whole memories of the drinking in my home scared the tar out of me. I was so afraid to drink. Apparently my dad said he was an alcoholic too. He went to treatment maybe when I was in my 30s or 40s. I don't know. He wasn't in my life then. But knowing those things about my parents, I have lots of alcoholism in the rest of my family too. I just thought if I drank, I could become an alcoholic and then I'll be like my mom. That's what an alcoholic was. Somebody who was completely out of control, who would sit in a rocking chair and scream and cry, whether she was drunk or sober, sometimes for days on end. Quit doing mom things and let everything pile up and the dad's moving in and out and we're getting back together and splitting up. It's just like, you know, ridiculous stuff. And I just thought, well, the way I'm going to survive in this world is one, I'm not going to drink. Two, I'm not going to depend on a guy to take care of me. I will go to school, I'll go to college, I'll get a profession, and I'm going to take care of myself. And I'm going to learn how to get people to like me by just being whoever it is you needed me to be. And I think, for considering the background I came from, pretty darn successful at that. There was a lot of issues and problems with living like that, though. And those issues and problems began to manifest themselves in what I think of as this rinse and repeat cycle. And the way that I sought control in my life and perfectionism, the way I sought to manage through self-reliance was through fantasy. And it worked a little bit something like this. I would over and over and over again in my life do these what I call dry erase, you know, rinse and repeats where something wasn't working and I would just kick it all to the curb and reinvent this whole new scenario about how it was going to be great. And you know what? For a minute, it was. Because I'm, you know, living off this adrenaline of this fantasy and I'm out there and I'm doing stuff and I'm doing things that are socially acceptable. You know, I'm in school, I'm in college, I got the job, I'm paying rent, I got a car, I got a guy, I got the things. And I just start getting more of that. And then what happens eventually is that it just doesn't look so good anymore after a while. And I start getting discontent, and I start getting restless, and I start getting irritable, and it's all your fault, and I'm the victim, but I know how to fix it. I just kick you to the curb, and I get a better one. Whatever that is, it's a better one. And I did that over and over, and each time. And so my shelf life for this over and over, it really starts to get weird at about 2 years. And then I can stick it out for a few more years, and then usually that's it after a while. It's like, I am done, and I'm, boom, I'm out of here. And so that's how I live my life. So you can probably recognize a lot of these patterns in yourself as a drinker or a user as trying to always, you know, beat the game. It's going to be better next time. I'm going to get it right. I'm not going to do that thing that way again. I'm going to do a geographic. I'm going to go with these people over here. I'm going to get this job. I'm going to get that girl. I'm going to get that guy. Whatever it is, that was me. And that is alcoholism, you guys. That is exactly how my alcoholism manifested itself, but I wasn't drinking. And maybe I could have gone on like that. I don't know. But what ended up happening to me was the end of 2015, I was married. I was in another, like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I feel like a caged animal. I can't divorce this guy. No, I'm here. I'm here for the long haul. I'm miserable, but we're going to figure this out. It's going to be okay. I'm just going to suck it up and push it down and act like I'm good because on the outside, everything is great. And what I did in this particular marriage was I have, you know, like these check boxes of things that I had to have. You know, I even had a list. I had like the guy, like the ideal guy, and the job, and the house, and the money, and the travel, and the cars, and the this, and the that, right, in Florida. And I started getting more and more restless and irritable and discontented. I remember sitting in Florida, you have these lanais with a screen around it. It's like a cage. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, I'm in a cage. And I felt like an animal. And I'm just like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? That's when I started drinking. However, I did not drink alcoholically, but drinking did something for me. And I'm in my 50s at this point. I'm in my early 50s. And I'm thinking, like, I can now drink successfully, because if I was going to be an alcoholic, I would have been one by now. This is my crazy thinking. I mean, hello. I mean, and this is the truth for me, because all those 50 years before, whatever, however old you are, maybe when you take your first drink, 14, 15, you know, I didn't like it. I didn't want to throw up, I didn't want to get dizzy, I didn't like feeling out of control. Oh, hell no, this is a girl that's always in control. And I was the girl to go to the wedding, leave the half a thing of champagne on the table, I didn't like champagne. You know, I just didn't do it. It didn't do it for me, and I also told myself, I will never be with another alcoholic again. That was my first husband when I was 20, left him when I was 24, with a daughter, and I didn't. I didn't date guys that drank or used. I stay away from it. And so I could successfully just kind of put that, like, under the rug somewhere. And then when I was with Dale, you know, we started drinking socially. And he wasn't an alcoholic. And I thought, wow, this is kind of fun. You know, I kind of like this. I'm kind of loose. I'm starting to feel, like, relaxed. And that's how I started dealing with the tension in that marriage. What started happening in that marriage was I started craving alcohol. I started looking for opportunities to drink. I started looking for people to drink with. I started doing what we do, creating the scene of the people and the places and all that where you're going to do your thing. And that started to become more and more of a priority for me. Still not a problem, but still like, oh, sometimes I just had to have it. Like I try to go to a whatever convenience store and get some wine and drink it in the car. These are things that I look back now and just go, what the heck was going on? And I was getting it, you know, I was catching, you know, alcoholism, but I didn't know it. And then he died suddenly at the end of 2015. He had a heart attack when we were riding bikes. And, you know, as you can imagine, my whole world turned upside down. I had never experienced anything like this before, not a loss like that. And what did I do? I went off the rails shortly after. You know, at first, typical to my way of doing things, I'm going to be the good girl, I'm going to go to Greek school, I'm going to take a class, I'm going to check off all the boxes, I'm going to get an A in Greek and a gold star because I got to get over this. You know, I got places to go, I got people to meet, you know, I got to wind it back up, so let's get this thing going, you know, and that's what I did. And I thought I'm doing so well, and I'm, you know, coping, and everybody's telling me you're doing so good, and working, I'm taking care of this house by myself. Haha, grief, just try to get me, you know. I didn't know anything, you guys. I didn't know I was pushing all that down. I didn't know I was on my way to becoming an alcoholic. I just thought at some point after succeeding at grief, I was going to be able to basically throw all my... I just thought, what is the point? This is my head. What is the point of trying to be a good girl all the time? I've never been a bad girl. You know, I get all the check boxes in life to be the good girl, but I'm like, those people have a lot of fun being bad. What is that about? I wonder if I could do that. You know, it's almost like I just had this one little list that I hadn't done yet. I've done everything else to try to carve satisfaction and happiness out of my life. And this is why my story, I think, gets a little backwards, is because when I did hit bottom, which I will kind of go back and forth a little bit here. When I did hit bottom, the reason why it would seem so unlikely for me to hit a bottom is because all the years before drinking, I had done everything I thought I could do to fix myself. And all those years, I never felt okay in my own skin. I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I could sustain any lasting happiness. I never thought I could, and I tried, believe me. I went to psychiatrists, I went to psychologists, I read self-help books. I did spirituality, I went to churches, I did yoga, I went to college, I got a profession, I got the right guy in the right place with the right thing, multiple times. And still, it always cycled back to, I'm miserable. What is wrong with me? How come other people have the rule book to life and I don't? Right? That was me to a T. So, backing up a little bit back to what happened when I decided to be a bad girl, I thought, well, who cares? You know, people just die in a second. That could happen to me. It could happen to you. So why don't we just have fun? Eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow you may die. And I just decided I was going to put a profile up and see what happened, and I was going to start doing whatever the hell I wanted, which included drinking. And, you know, I snagged a guy, like, in 5 minutes, and I'm from Florida to Atlanta, and meanwhile, I'm not jumping on airplanes, I'm not doing that thing again, I'm just going to go have sex in Atlanta, that's it. Sorry, babe. Anyway, so that's what I thought, right? But I'm not that girl, you guys, I don't do that, I'm not wired that way, you know? If I get attracted, I fall in love, and that's it. We're an item, you know? So pretty soon, I'm with this guy who is massively into all the things. I didn't know all the things he was into, but he was into all the things. I just thought he drank a lot. But anyway, I could now do what I wanted to do, and meet all... It was so exciting coming here from Florida, because I didn't have to answer to anybody. I got a stay-at-home job, and everything is just crafted around this furnace of alcoholism, which has probably been there forever, and now I've got the green light, and I'm with a guy that just is like, party on, you know, and I'm like, okay, let's see what this is, you know, and started drinking every day very quickly, and absolutely loved it, you know. If people that talk about how they, you know, what alcohol did for them, like that, this is the difference. This is how come I know I'm an alcoholic, because I had all those decades of drinking when it didn't do that for me. Remember I left the half glass, like, I didn't like how it made me feel. That's how normal people drink. Or they feel a little out of control. Oh, no, no, you know, I'm done, whatever. Occasionally, maybe they overdo it. But that, when I became an alcoholic, it became the relief valve, right? The thing that when I put it in my body, I just went, I totally get that when I hear speakers talk about what happened when they first drank. And most people got that when they were, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16. You know, this is me in my 50s now. This is why it's kind of backwards, because I'm not doing this now until much later in life. And so I got to have this release every single day. And the interesting thing about this, like, something's going on in my mind, even though I'm loving it so much, and, you know, he and I are having, like, this spiritual, oh, now I know what love is kind of thing, like, all the fake feelings that go with it, and all the fake intimacy that's there, and all the friends that you rapidly accumulate, that everybody loves everybody, and you think that's real, and, oh my God, you know, that, and I'm so naive. I just think that this is like the real thing, you know, because I've never experienced this before. But every morning when I would wake up, I would be hungover, of course, feeling like crap, like we do, dehydrated, run down, just awful, awful, awful. And in my mind, I would think, which one is real? Was the night before real? And if it is, then how come I can't get there right now? And if this morning is real, you know, then what's wrong with me, and why do I keep doing this? You know, it was like, and I remember feeling like there was this tap, tap, tap on my shoulder. What are you doing? You know, it's almost like my higher power or my late husband was just saying, sweetheart, what are you doing? And the way I answered that question was, don't mess with me. I don't want to talk to you. What the hell are you? So I was angry, and I was rebellious, and I was like, you're the one who died on me, you know, mofo, you know. So let me do what I'm going to do. I'm doing me, you know, so don't tell me. And anyway, you were blah, 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 you know, whatever. Anyway, these are the conversations I had in my head, but I also felt like somebody was saying, I love you so much, and I don't want to see you do this to yourself. And I would just answer back, you don't know what you're talking about. I know what I'm doing here. And so that continued on. And so guess how long it took before I started to wear off? 2 years. Go figure. So I'm doing all this stuff, and of course the magic of this person starts to wear off, because let's face it, nobody can sustain that. That's not sustainable. People are people. Nobody has that kind of power, really, if I'm not sense. But, you know, things start getting weirder, and fights start, and we're not exactly getting along and interested in each other. And I started, the glasses just came off in this relationship, and I was just like, oh my God, what is this? Who is this? Who am I? Like, all these questions. And I tried to push it down with drinking. And I could do it temporarily, but it always kept coming back. And eventually the fight started getting worse, and I started getting scared, and I started seeing the side of him that I didn't know. And then I started to realize I'm in danger. Like real danger, like physical danger. You know, like I gotta hide the knives and the guns and call the whatever the battered place and figure out what I'm supposed to do if things get gnarlier. And this isn't me. You know, and where am I going to go? I've left my entire community. I've left all my friends. I've sold my house. My stuff's in storage. My family doesn't know. They're all in California. My family doesn't know what I'm doing. Hi, everything's fine. You know, we're not talking about it at all. Nobody's seeing this except people that never knew me before I got to Atlanta. It's the perfect, like, alibi, right? So I start thinking, I'm going to have to get out. And I don't know how, I don't know when, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm going to have to get out of here. And when I do, it's going to suck. Like, I'm just going to, like, be annihilated. I knew it. I knew I was going to have, like, this existential crisis, nervous breakdown, because I knew it was waiting for me when I left. Somehow, somewhere inside me, my higher power, I felt like was orchestrating this bottom that was coming very, very soon. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, but it was coming. And the way it looked like was, when I leave this situation, I'm going to have to deal with my grief. I'm going to have to deal with not just Dale passing away and how I got to Atlanta. I'm going to have to deal with all of it. All of the things that I've been trying to do to try to get happy, to try to find God, to try to have connection, to try to have relationships, to try to be successful, to try to be useful, to try to have purpose. All the big life questions, they were just like right there waiting for me, and I just thought, oh, I can't. I can't do it. Please, you know, make it something different. But the answer was, it was the same. No matter how I looked at it, no matter how I sliced it, no matter how I tried to make up with him, it was coming, and I knew it. And I thought, all right, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I know I can't do this and drink. How did I know that? I just knew. I just knew that if I kept drinking, I was going to end up somewhere else that I just did not want to be. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to therapy, and I'm going to get honest. I'm going to tell one person what's going on, the truth, all of it. And I said, I'm here because I need to leave this guy, and I don't know what to do, and I think I'm going to go crazy. And she said, I hear you, and I'm here, and okay, you know. And I don't remember much else about that conversation with her, but I just remember it feeling really, really good to get it off my chest. And I remember she asked me, can you quit drinking? I don't know what she said, for a week or something like that, until you see me next time. And I'm like, yeah, of course, you know, duh. And so I left the appointment and I went back to the place where I was living and I drank. Of course I drank, because I'm an alcoholic now and I don't know it. And I don't know that I have no power not to drink. I don't know that I have to drink. I don't know that I've lost my power of choice. I didn't understand why I drank. I didn't know, but I just thought, shit, I cannot not drink. What am I going to do now? And I thought, I got to go to AA, because I got to not drink to get out of this situation, because I'll totally fall apart if I'm drinking. I'll just have nothing, nobody. I can't talk. It was too much. So this is all happening like within a few days, and I go to AA on February 15th. I get to stay sober on Valentine's Day. It's Valentine's Day. And on February 15th, 2019, I went into AA and I just bawled, of course. And I met a woman who gave me her phone number, and I 2 days later, I had to go to one of these party buses with the disco ball and the pole and the party and the bus to a play and after. Oh my God, it was just a nightmare. And I thought I was just people. I just thought I was going to lose my mind. But I thought, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to drink. I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking. It was really tough, but I didn't. And the next day, everything blew up. So this is like over 4 or 5 days, and I just had to tell the truth to this guy. You know, I'm like, he said, why are you crying? And I said, I know you spent so much money and you cared so much about that event, and I really appreciate what you did for all those people, take them out. But I thought it was pathetic, and I think it's really sad. And he just went effing ballistic on me. And, of course, and so I don't know why I'm telling this in all this detail. I guess I need to, but at any rate, I felt like this energy just like pushed me from behind, and it was just like, you're going and you're going now. And I'm like, okay, I'm going and I'm going now. And so I go upstairs, I get the suitcase, and I'm throwing shit in it, and I guess I'm going now. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going. Okay, we're going. All right, we're going. And he's like, you're going. And I'm like, I guess I'm going. You know, he's yelling, and I'm like, I'm going. You know, and I left, and I went to a hotel. And I stayed in the hotel, and then I had this pre-planned, like, series of places I had to be. Like, really weird. Like, right now, like, in this time, it's like I had to go to Florida for something, I had to go to work in Kentucky for something, and I'm Airbnb and couch surfing for a couple weeks, I'm coming to meetings, and I'm just losing my shit, you know. Like, there's no reality, there's no ground, there's no time, there's no space, I am just a complete wreck. Because you have to remember, I know what I'm in for. I know that I am going to be crushed by this weight of my entire life, and it's not going to be easy. And so I get an apartment right over by Triangle, so I got sober at Triangle, and get this little apartment, and I think it's really cute, and I called it like my healing cave, you know. It was like, I don't know what's going to happen in here, but I'm going to find out who I am. And I don't care how bad it gets. And I don't care how much I cry. And I don't care how sad I am. I don't care how angry I get. I'm just going to go through it. I'm going to walk through this for the first time in my life. I'm going to figure this out with God. I'm going to do this thing. I don't mean like I have power. I mean, I'm going to surrender. That was my surrender. So if you can see how this piece of my drinking that started in 2016 and ended in 2019, you could say, that doesn't match up. Alcoholics don't come into AA after 3 years of drinking. This one did. This one did. This one got as devastated and annihilated and surrendered and broken and shattered as anyone else who's been out there doing that much, much longer with much bigger consequences. I'm here to tell you it's possible. And if you're that person, come see me afterwards because we can talk. And that part of my story is really, really important. It's like what alcohol does to me, how I could possibly hit bottom, why I was willing to stay here and do the 12 steps is because there was something moving in me that I don't understand, that I still don't understand. But something was pushing me towards being whole, towards being a woman of integrity, towards being a woman of honor, and doing what we do here. I still don't get it or understand it, but anyway, so you can tell I'm at this point in my story where I'm arriving here. And I get it, that first step, that woman I met at the very first meeting, she became my sponsor, and we started going through the book, and I'm all over the place. And I'm not blaming her, but I wasn't given the direction like I have in my home group now. And she encouraged me to go anywhere I needed to go for help. So I'm going to Al-Anon, and I'm going to CODA, and I'm going to Sex and Love, and I'm going to AA, and I'm like everywhere all the time. Because why? Because I have no friends. Because I have no life. And I got time to do as much of this stuff as I want. And it's all about me anyway, so let's just go. And so that's what I did, and I'm getting more and more sick is what's happening. I don't want to drink, but I'm... You know what's worse than drinking? It's not drinking without a solution. That's where I was. And I'm like, I'm going to lose my mind here. So, and I'm going to a lot of meetings where everybody's talking about their feelings, you know, nothing wrong with open discussion, but I had done decades of open discussion, other stuff. 12 step foods. That's all I'm going to say about that. And that never got me a spiritual experience. That never got me to doing what we do here. And I thought, I'm going to die doing this. I can't. I'm not hearing what I need to hear. I'm not seeing what I need to see. This is just like I did for decades before. Something's got to give. And I went to the tradition group. And something really, really different was happening there. And I didn't know what it was. I just thought, this is interesting. What is this? It was really different for me. And I wanted something that I heard. I can't explain it. Maybe it was more like an energy or an enthusiasm or some positivity or solution for people that were just on fire, not just for AA, but for themselves and each other. I don't know what it was. It was probably all the above. And they all knew each other. This is a meeting, 200 people, and everybody's and I'm like, whoa, okay, what's going on? And I remember hearing my sponsor share. And she said, I don't know what she said, but she said stuff that I was just like, whoa, that's really different. I really like that. I don't know, I'm not hearing that other places like that. And it was like kind of one of those movements, one of those moments again where it's the go, 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 you're going, I am, okay, I guess I am, I'm going. It was like that. It was like, I need to ask her to be my sponsor. And I just did. And I don't know what pushed me to do that, but I did. And she said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You have 5 things that I want you to do every day. I was like, oh, God, somebody wants me to do something in order every day. That's great. That's right up my money. What are you? Well, I want you to call me every day. I'm like, great, yes, somebody wants me to call them every single day. I was like, so happy. I was like, yay, we get to, somebody's going to, be there for me, kind of thing. And, there were more things. It was, go to quality meetings, read your big book every day, start to pray, join a home group, get a service commitment, and call women. And it was all written down. I was like, wow, I can do this. I got this. Okay, and then we start meeting every week. And I'm like, I'm kind of like the good girl, the 4.0 girl. I'm the girl that does call every day. I'm the girl who does. I start doing all the things, but it's not so much because I need to, be prideful about it. It's because I was scared. I was really scared. I forgot to mention when I was sober 30 days, I was such a mess. I went to treatment at 30 days. Not that many people do that. I wasn't detoxing, And my qualifying drug was doctor prescribed Ambien 5 milligrams a night. It's like, because I was already sober, the insurance wasn't going to pay for it. But anyway, I was still such a mess at 6 months sober that I was willing to do all these things. And honestly, it did not get comfortable, but it is a lot more comfortable now for a minute. Like anybody who has a really kind of difficult, no skin, hair of the dog, waking up with your mind racing on the regular at early sobriety, that's my story. That is my untreated alcoholism. I know that now. And I don't ask me how, or don't ask me, you know, the time frame of when that settled down. I just know it did, and it does, and it keeps happening. And it's not because I'm working on myself. It's not because I'm, if anything, I ignore myself. The more I ignore myself, the better things, you know, tend to go. The way that we practice AA in fifth tradition is really different than some places. But for me, this alcoholic that's been so self-absorbed and so, like, self-managing and so perfectionistic, that for me to have this really kind of backwards, through the side door, grace of a higher power coming into my life and doing things in me that can become me, that is not from my own doing. If anything, it's from neglecting the stuff that's problematic and keeping my focus on, really, it's like doing those five things and just trying to do the right thing and helping other alcoholics. And I know you guys hear that a lot, how it's like, oh, I help others and I get to stay sober. And it's like, until you actually do that on the regular, and watch how this grace comes in. You know, because over and over and over I've said to myself, I'm too selfish. I'm not the kind of person that wants to help people. You know, I'm too busy. You know, I got things. And I'm like, how am I ever going to get the willingness to want to help people? And honestly, it just comes by, I don't know how that comes. I don't know. But the phone rings, it's a sponsee, hello. I'm not the girl that says hello when the phone rings. I'm the girl that says, I'll get a deep later with me. And probably not. Or my brother called today and I was making dinner and I'm in a rush to get here. I couldn't pick up. You know, it's like the shrimp and everything. It's like, I can't. But I'm like, oh, well, this is my brother. And it's like, I'm not the girl that wants to talk to her brother. You know, and all this kind of stuff. Or in my home group, it's like I get asked to do stuff, and it's like you just say yes, you know, and you get asked to do and asked to do. And like this week is a really super busy week with Roundup, and I've got these several commitments. And it's like, that's being there for others. That's getting out of self. That's a way for me to not think about my petty plans and designs. Because really, none of that stuff really matters all that much. My life is pretty okay, right? Pretty set up. Everything is fine. If you ask me right now what is my problem, I will say I don't have one. Because really, I don't. Except the ones I manufacture in my mind. And some of the ways I deal with that, I pray a lot. And it's like, why do you pray? You know, are you even sure there's a God? And it's like, I just know that I get results. I don't know how it works. I just know that when I say the fear prayer, it goes away. When I say the resentment prayer, I'm not so mad. When I do the satisfied prayer, all of a sudden I'm doing stuff that I didn't want to do. When I pray for willingness and power and courage, it's like it kind of shows up on the regular. And then what happens over time is that my feet are trained, right? These things become habits. And they don't happen overnight. It's like I have to keep repeating this way of living, this design for living that really works. So that I get to have what I've always wanted. Like I told you about that list, you know, the connections and the people and the integrity and the value and the work. But I get more than that. Because I also get the sense of I'm okay inside. Finally, the thing I've always wanted is to be okay inside. And I'm not like great, but I'm also not terrible. I'm just okay. Like, okay is like, you know, five is the new ten or whatever. It's like, it's just so good to be okay. You don't have to be, in fact, on top of the world or on top of the mountain with excitement is, to me, just as dangerous, because that was my thing when I decided to go off the deep end, off the rails. It was, I thought it was a spiritual experience that God was saying, go do whatever you want, you're free. And I thought, got so excited by that. So excitement for me is just as dangerous as the everything's crap. So anyway, but what I get on a regular is just this feeling of peace and this feeling of joy and this feeling of freedom. Especially when I'm talking to my sponsees on the phone. Each and every one of them, and I'll stop in a second, has some part of their story that's just like me. And every time I get to talk to them, I get to tell myself what I need to hear too. And it opens something up in me that is this space of solution. It's almost like I'm telling myself what I need to hear, and hopefully something that they need to hear. And it's just this love, you know, transpires between us. And I can feel it. It's like this gorgeous, beautiful connection. And I think I've run out of time, and I just want to say thank you for listening to me.
It ended bad.